Oh, Golic and Wingo with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, presented by Progressive Insurance. Our phone guests join us on the Shell Penzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. With all due respect to Allo Black, Patrick Mahomes is the man. There's no way around it.
Standing atop, the sport that is king of North American sports now has its true king, the chosen one, the prince that was promised, standing atop the heap right now, $500 million in hand.
$503 million.
$503 million. Like, that's what it feels like we're saying, though, about an NFL player making
zillion,
this kind of money.
$1 million, gajiggity zillion dollars is what it sounds like.
Pretty much.
Absolutely ridiculous. As Patrick Mahomes lands that contract, and he does it at the age of 24, where he's already secured an MVP of the regular season, a Super Bowl win, and a Super Bowl MVP. So to recap, he's the youngest player ever to have had an MVP and a Super Bowl win and a Super Bowl MVP in the history of the NFL. And I'm sure he's the youngest ever to record a $500 million contract as well. So he just continues, because he's the only one, he continues to just go down the checklist here with what is a remarkable start to an incredible, we think will be an incredible career.
I do enjoy the things that get put in our research packets when it comes to otherworldly contracts. $450 million and what it can buy you in the total value of that extension. How about 1,077 Lamborghini Aventador S models? The MSRP of that car, $417,000. Ho-hum. Hide the money. There's poor people around here, Patrick.
Correct.
346 rolls of 22-karat gold toilet paper, which costs $1.3 million per roll. Do people buy that?
I cannot think of a reason why you would want to.
Is it comfortable to wipe with toilet paper?
That's exactly what I was about to
say. Well, so gold's really malleable. Like, you can flatten it out. There's a lot of really interesting fact about gold. Like, the amount of it that we've already mined is basically all that's in circulation now. There's not a lot of new gold to be found out there in the world, but it's very malleable. You can flatten it down to super, super thin margins here. So maybe it is worthy of a wipe.
Okay.
Patrick can also buy the Weather Channel and still have $150 million left to spend. It sold March 2018 for $300 million. We call that couch change for young Patricio.
Yes, that will be something. Oh, I left this check somewhere. But the two of the most interesting things about this is not only our reaction, but everybody in the NFL's reaction to this. It's like, yeah, this is cool. And I think part of it is obviously the time we're living in, where there's so much uncertainty about the things that we want to be taking place, which is sports across the country. But the overwhelming majority of people's reaction to Patrick Mahomes getting this contract is, yeah, it sounds about right.
Well, not only does it sound about right, but it's what every player hopes for. Like, the reason you get guys like Chris Jones and Melvin Gordon and Le'Veon Bell all holding out is they believe that if I go out and perform at a level that exceeds where I was drafted, at a level that exceeds expectation, and that is considered the top of my class, the top of my position, I should be rewarded with a contract that pushes the boundaries of that position. We know that's not true for everywhere, but when we see it true in certain instances, it gives everyone else hope, even if it's misguided hope, that it's possible. It's what you want to be the case. If you are the best at what you do, you're compensated accordingly.
Right, and that certainly is the case here. So now, what does this mean for the Kansas City Chiefs? Again, they waited 50 years between Super Bowl wins. They won Super Bowl IV with Len Dawson as their quarterback, 23-7 over the Minnesota Vikings. They waited 50 years for another crack at the can, and they won Super Bowl 54, 31-20, with Patrick Mahomes leading the way over the San Francisco 49ers. So when you sign a quarterback to essentially it's a 12-year, he's locked in for the next 12 seasons, which is a remarkable thing for someone at the age of 24, what are your expectations? Our own Dan Orlovsky says he believes this means the Chiefs have one thing on their mind: catching the Patriots' dynastic qualities.
Patrick Mahomes is the biggest star this early the NFL has ever seen. He's the best quarterback this early the NFL has ever seen. And I would say this, after hearing Shefty talk about the numbers, this now makes me think they're going to go chase the Patriots. They're going to go chase down Tom Brady's 6 Super Bowls and 9 Super Bowls appearances. Because the reality is this, age, $450 million is a ton of money over 10 years. I'm not debating that. But Patrick Mahomes will be underpaid in 4 or 5 seasons. He easily could go go back to the table and get more than $50 million. He's that good.
So a couple of things there. Number one, if you look at the contract and the way it's broken down, we just talked to Bill Barnwell about it. We've talked to Lewis Riddick about it. There probably will be a redo of this contract in 4 or 5 years. There's no way. There's no doubt about it, because I think it's 2025 or 2026 where they have to guarantee the 2027 number, and that is the alarming jump in the value of the guaranteed money going forward. So we're probably going to look at a renegotiation in about 5 years of this. And yeah, he's going to get even more money. So we talk about $500 million right now. With the way this thing is, barring catastrophic injury, it's probably going to be renegotiated, which will be well north of that number. So that's one reality. The other thing is what he talked about with chasing the Patriots dynasty. I think that's a noble endeavor. And I think it's something that we should all strive. What did Vince Lombardi say? We will chase perfection knowing we will not catch it. Instead, we will find excellence. So, I mean, I don't think we're ever going to see anybody do 9-6 again. 9 Super Bowl appearances, 6 rings for the New England Patriots. I just don't see that as a feasible thing. So what is a more realistic expectation in your minds for what Kansas City should expect? Because right now, like again, this year alone, they returned 20 of 22 starters, and this contract for 2020 added a grand total of $30,000 to the cap.
Yeah, I think this is, and kind of Lewis Riddick brought this up, I think it's about what's at the core for all of this, though, because that's all you can really build and count on. You're right, expecting them to meet the bar that the Patriots set is misguided.
Yeah.
Because having a definite plan for anything that's going to take place over 10 years, like, hell, the part of the reason we laugh at this contract is because none of us know where we're going to be in 10 years. Yeah. I can't tell you what I'm going to be doing in 2031, but Patrick can in theory. Yeah. And it's because they've decided to build around that core. I think you can be otherworldly. You can be what Lewis talked about, Super Bowl or bust every year. That should be it. That should be it. But you can't plan on any more of that because football's random. All you can plan on is what's at the core. Why did the Patriots work for so long? Because we looked at Brady and Belichick and said, that's a worthy core in a lot of this one.
Yes.
So you look at the Kansas City Chiefs now and you say Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. To me, like,
very worthy.
The Patriots and Bill Belichick are like Brad and Angelina. It works and it's great, but along the way we heard some rumblings that it wasn't always so clean cut behind closed doors. This one to me is Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds. We look at this and go, it shouldn't be fair for two people so perfect and beautiful at what they do to be able to coexist in a way that all of us look on and envy. We all see the way that Andy chuckles when he talks about Patrick, the way they look longingly at each other, and they're both so good at what they do that it shouldn't be fair that one talent should land so perfectly with another and the union should be so fruitful and multiply. But that's exactly what we've got right here. The NFL power couple that you can look at and say, yeah, I'll bank on that foundation and whatever comes with it, because this deal wouldn't happen unless their relationship was in a place that both sides felt comfortable committing like this.
Yeah, and they are. To me, if they get to and win two more rings, I think that's fine. I mean, and that may be difficult. You talked about it, the randomness of football. I think we all could agree, despite on not getting there, the Saints were probably the best team in the NFC over the last 3 seasons. And then what happened? The Minneapolis miracle with Case Keenum. And then after that, the pass interference call that would have allowed them to either run down the clock or kick a field goal to win or seal the game with a touchdown against the Rams. And then an overtime loss to the Minnesota Vikings last year. And we're talking about a team that has a Hall of Fame quarterback, a Hall of Fame head coach, a really good defense. Granted, only one true option at that time as a wide receiver, but they added Emmanuel Sanders, and a really good running game. And that wasn't enough. Now, that being said, Drew Brees being tail end of his career as opposed to Patrick Mahomes just beginning. I mean, he said this year like was the first year he really understood defenses. That should terrify the hell out of everybody. So we are talking about a quarterback that I still think has the chance to rise and be even better than what we've seen. But the randomness of football is a part of this that cannot be explained in any other way or in any other sport.
The thing that looks the best at the time can crumble and fall sooner than we was more accustomed to that than anyone else. Look at a different sport. Like, look at what we thought was going to be the Golden State dynasty for how long it was going to last. And certainly at the height of it, it achieved at an unbelievable level. But we all figured it would last longer. And now look at them. It's gone from forget just petering off. It's careened off a cliff. It's smoldering at the bottom. The wreckage is hardly recognizable from the team that we saw there. That's how quickly it can change. And that's in a sport where year to year, the product is much more stable.
Yeah.
Year to year in basketball. So if we look at that as a cautionary tale, the Chiefs have already, relative to football teams, been achieving an insanely high level for this stretch here in the limited time with Patrick. What happens going forward, if it's anything close to that, is still an overwhelming success.
Right. So again, that's the situation going forward. No fan, because fan is short for fanatic in Kansas City, will think anything but a Super Bowl every year is to be expected. Of course, that's what they think in New England, and lo and behold, it happened a lot of times. So we'll see what happens there going forward. Meanwhile, someone who's having a Patrick Mahomes-like run on the return to NASCAR now joins us, and that's driver Kevin Harvick, who won the Brickyard 400 over the weekend for the third time this past weekend. Kevin, good morning. Thanks for being with us. It feels like you and Denny Hamlin are just going to split up who wins the entire rest of the season here. Am I wrong?
Well, I hope so. You know, that would be fine with us. You know, I think as you look at coming back from the COVID break and everything that our team has done, and you know, you look over, and this week it was ironic because we were pitted right next to each other, and you see those two teams performing at a high level with Denny Hamlin's team and my team is a lot of fun. You know, I think as especially being on the winning side of it and being able to perform like we're performing. So, you know, with the circumstances and everything that we're going through, just says a lot about our organization and our team being able to prepare the cars with no practice, no qualifying, just showing up and racing. And I think our experience as a group is definitely paying off, and we're able to get the results with it.
Kevin, can you take us back to the final 10 laps of this race? Obviously, a lot that went into you ultimately crossing the finish line in first place, but walk us through that whole process, Denny Hamlin leading at that point and everything that transpired from your perspective.
Yeah, so, you know, we went throughout the whole day and you know, we wound up right behind Denny there with 10 laps to go, actually probably a few more laps than that to go. And we knew that they were really close on you know, the tire wear that they had on the right front. So we wanted to push them as hard as we could. Our cars were you know, super evenly matched, and so we pushed as hard as we could, and ultimately we were hoping for handling problems, and ultimately for Denny wound up in a tire failure and a huge hit, which, you know, that was our first concern, was making sure that Denny was okay and able to get out of the car. And, you know, I've talked to him since, and everything with him from a health side is good. So that's the main thing. We were able to take over the lead. We had a good restart there with a couple laps to go in overtime from my teammate, and we're able to clear Matt Kenseth. It's like we're going back in time with myself and Matt Kenseth and, you know, Matt coming back and driving the car. But, you know, it's we were able to clear him going into turn one and win the race. And, you know, for me, I grew up in Bakersfield, California, a huge Rick Mears fan, wanting to race in the Indy 500. And so to be able to go to the Brickyard and talk about winning our third Brickyard 400 for me is a little bit surreal. It's like you're living out your childhood dream, you know, at a racetrack that you dreamed of just racing at, let alone winning at. So it's been a special place for me to go to since I got to go there for my first time in 2001. And we've been fortunate to have won our third Brickyard 400, so pretty incredible to think about the whole process and where we are today.
Kevin Harvick with us, and as you mentioned, this was your third win at the Brickyard. You grew up, as you said, watching Rick Mears. What is it about the Brickyard that brings out the best in you? Is there something about the layout, or is it just the fact that that's a place that, as you said, you've been dreaming about since you were a kid?
Well, you know, I think when you look at since I've gone to Stuart Haas Racing, this is our seventh year. We were fortunate to, you know, to win the Brickyard back in 2003 with Richard Childress Racing. But it really has been a racetrack just, you know, that we've been able to perform at, you know, really since we started going there at Stuart Haas. And I think as you look at the last couple years, we've been able to win the race. But, you know, I think as you look back in the previous five, for us, we felt like we've definitely lost a couple as well with what we felt like was the best car. But it's a racetrack that the whole garage looks at as kind of a marquee race to kind of step up, bring your new engines and things that you feel like are going to perform at a high level, because you're going to the world's most famous racetrack, right? So there's a lot of history and you know, a lot of pride that comes with being able to win at the Brickyard and to be able to accomplish that, you know, with a team and a group of guys that are in there battling with you on a week-to-week basis, and we know how important that race is and how much effort we put into it on a yearly basis in order to go there and try to win. So to be able to accomplish that is very rewarding.
Kevin Harvick with us here on Goal Look and Wingo. Kevin, earlier you mentioned, you know, your guys' experience as a group with the limited practice time being something that helps as the schedule's changed for you guys and everything about the preparation has really been different because of the coronavirus. I'm curious on the other side of this, not having fans in attendance, certainly having, you know, more isolation, less time and less, you know, commotion overall around the race day experience. Has that almost allowed you to be able to focus even more? Like, have there been benefits to this process that you guys are starting to feel this far into the season?
Well, you definitely have to learn from it, right? You know, I think as you look at the things that you're doing now, the way that we're racing, the way that we communicate, the way that our sport in general goes to the racetrack, and you know, if you turn on the television on Sunday and you look at the race, you would never know that we didn't practice or qualify unless somebody told you. And, you know, I think from a sports standpoint, you have to look at that process and you have to understand what you can apply to what we do going forward, because of just like everything else in the world, right? You know, you have to look at it from a financial standpoint in order to make it, you know, as efficient as possible to make sure that the owners and everybody is getting the most out of their business and what they're doing. So from my standpoint, you know, I really believe that, you know, doing this for 20 years is playing into our hands right now, because most of these racetracks I go to, I know them like the back of my hand. You know, I know where, you know, the let-off markers are. I know where I want to be on the racetrack. You know, I think for us as a team, you know, it's really being able to show the preparation and the detail-oriented group of people that I have working on my cars in the shop or at the racetrack, and the way that we've adapted to communicating through, you know, our computers and using our, you know, our team's apps and the way that we communicate as a team has really shown through. You know, not every week has been perfect. But usually by the end of the race, we've got things figured out. And so the process is definitely different. You know, I think as you look at it for me, you know, having a family has definitely changed, you know, the amount of time that I've been able to spend at home. I went on Sunday last week. Sunday morning is usually I go up on race day and I come back on race day. You travel for the most part by yourself. You go to the bus, you walk to the car, and everything is by yourself. I got done this weekend. We win the race, we go to victory lane, they take the car, and I'm walking around by myself. And I walked out of the racetrack, forgot to go out on the straightaway and kiss the bricks like, you know, the traditional Indy kissing the bricks, because I didn't have anybody to help me pay attention. So it is you're alone, and it's, you know, it's a very different feeling, you know, not walking out of there with all that enthusiasm, and excitement from winning the race, and you're so used to sharing that emotion with the fans and the people that are at the racetrack, and now it's like you look around and you almost don't know what to do. You feel out of place. But as a sport, we're doing what we need to do to be on the racetrack and put on a show, and our TV partners and radio partners are doing a great job, and you know, to be able to put the events on and hopefully give everybody a few hours at home to watch some good TV of something that's not controversial.
Certainly it has been. The ratings have been really strong. What, 46% the Brickyard was up from where it was a year ago, year to year. Kevin Harvick with us, winner of the Brickyard 400. And then, you know, NASCAR is dealing with a lot of change and a lot of situations going on with the sport, with the banning of the Confederate flag, and then the garage pole that was, in fact, a noose that's found in Bubba Wallace's garage at Talladega, even though it wasn't put there because Bubba Wallace was in there. And then we had the president tweeting at Bubba Wallace after the weekend saying he owes NASCAR and everybody an apology for the hoax, when it was NASCAR that actually said that. Bubba Wallace didn't have anything to do with that. What's been your reaction to the latest response from the president?
Yeah, you know, I think as a sport, you know, I think everybody saw what our community is about at Talladega. You know, I've been on several sides of this and being able to, you know, see and lean on the support of our NASCAR community and the people inside of our sport and at the garage. And, you know, whether the circumstances turned out like they did or didn't at Talladega, the unity of our garage and the family atmosphere that is created in our community is not like anything else in any other sport. Most of these people have been around for a number of years, been around each other. Our kids have grown up around each other. A lot of the kids that raced together, you know, in a previous generation grew up together, and it's just it's a great community to be a part of, and not many people outside of it understand the unity that comes, you know, with the NASCAR garage. So it doesn't, the tweet doesn't change anything about. I think, you know, there's definitely some misinformed information inside of that tweet that doesn't represent anything that's going on. Obviously, the TV ratings are up. I think when you sit in NASCAR's shoes and you know, you look at the circumstances and the reaction that they had at Talladega, you know, if you do that any other way, and it doesn't work out the way that it did, you know, it's the circumstances are, you know, way worse on the other side. So, you know, I support, you know, everything that we're doing. You know, I take my kids to the racetrack when they let me pretty much every weekend, and I want people to be able to go to our racetracks and feel comfortable in the grandstands. And we're going to work as a group to make sure that happens. So, you know, a misinformed tweet is not going to change the unity and the direction of our sport and our garage and the way that we feel about each other. And, you know, that part is unfortunate, but, as a group, we're doing the right things and we will continue to do that moving forward.
Well, listen, there's no doubt, because the season is so long in NASCAR, that you are around these people. They are indeed like family, and you are with them for a long, long, long time. And the benefits continue to roll in for you. Kevin, we appreciate your time this morning. Congratulations on the third win at the Brickyard, and we'll just look to you and Denny just splitting up the wins for the rest of the year, all right?
Sounds like a great plan to me, guys. Have a great day. Thanks for having me.
Thanks,
Kevin. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it's a sure bet looking down the stretch that you're going to find those cars up there. It was, like you said, you were very happy to see that Denny Hamlin, first and foremost, was all right after
Absolutely.
That, because that was a hard hit into the wall there. But it was amazing. You heard them all chatting about the wear on that tire, the wear on that tire. And then sure enough, as we're getting ready to go down that lap for the seventh, you know, the seventh to last lap in that, good God, it just went in a hurry.
Well, it is amazing, too, how they, because of the tech. I mean, NASCAR, if you think about it, is one of the really incredible sports that embrace technology at a very early level to give you that kind of data to say, you know, laps before it happens, watch that front left tire, because that's going to be an issue for him going forward.
Between that and IndyCar racing, the amount of technology and money that goes into these machines, and he talked about the whole crew that's on that, it's a holistic process, and it's fascinating. We had Indy racing going on this weekend as well, and just to see all of the technology involved in this in modern racing is wild.
It absolutely is.
SportsCenter here on Golic and Wingo. The Kansas City Chiefs and Super Bowl MVP Patrick Mahomes have agreed to a 10-year contract extension.
Yeah.
That's a real thing that happened in America in 2020. This according to our own Adam Schefter. League sources told Schefter that the deal's worth $450 million over a 10-year period and could be worth up to $503 million in total. The deal ties Mahomes to Kansas City through the 2031 season and includes a $140 million injury guaranteed, as well as a no-trade clause. In the MLS, FC Dallas will not participate in the MLS's back tournament following the high number of positive tests for the coronavirus within the club. Major League Soccer announced this yesterday. Of the 557 players currently in Orlando, 13 have been confirmed positive tests for the coronavirus. 10 of those play for FC Dallas.
Unbelievable.
The MLS Commissioner Don Garber called it a tough but ultimately right decision for the tournament. And Major League Baseball has released its 60-game schedule for the 2020 season yesterday, headlined by an opening day showdown between the Yankees and the defending champion Nationals at 7 Eastern, followed by a 10 o'clock Western showdown between the Giants and the Dodgers, all on July 23rd. Both games will be broadcast on ESPN. SportsCenter is brought to you by 303 Touchless Sealant. Don't have time to wax your car? 303 Touchless Sealant's a quick and easier solution. Simply spray on and rinse off. It's that easy. Get the ultimate protection and shine in minutes that last up to 6 months. Now available at O'Reilly, AutoZone, and Advanced Auto Parts. Visit 303radio.com for more info.
Golic and Wingo with you on a Tuesday morning. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Our phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. So in the spate of time we're in where there hasn't been a lot of sports, we're looking for new and interesting stories to sort of fill our time about things that happened in and around tangentially sometimes sports. We've seen some great documentaries like The Last Dance and Lance Armstrong and everything that went on there, The Long Gone Summer. There's a really interesting piece going to be on ESPN tonight called The Hero of Goodall Park. It's an E60 piece debuting tonight at 7 o'clock Eastern. There's also an accompanying piece on ESPN Tom written by our next guest, Tom Juno, an ESPN senior writer who joins us now. Tom, good morning. Thanks for being with us. For those that are unenlightened, tell us a little bit about the story of The Hero of Goodall Park.
Sure. 2 years ago, on June 1st, 2018, a man is killed on a baseball field. He's run over by a car. He's a hero for a day, and then it comes out that he has a secret. I mean, he goes down to the field. He's a 68-year-old guy who goes down to the field to help the kids. It's during a Babe Ruth game. He's a hero for a day, and then it comes out that he has a secret of his own that winds up sort of, entwining three families together in this one tragic moment.
Tom, how did you come across this story? Because it wasn't something that I remember getting a ton of national attention.
Well, like all great stories, my wife told me. the film of the car on the baseball field, because he got run over by a car. The film of the car on the field went all over the world, like that little bit of video that was taken in a, you know, by an iPhone. But she told me about it. She was like, especially when the man's other life came, you know, and was revealed, she was like, you got to look at this. And, you know, I went up to Sanford, Maine, that happened in June. I went up to Sanford, Maine in July.
It's wow. There's a lot of sort of interesting plot twists and turns that we don't want to give too much away here.
Right. That's what I'm trying not to do. Yesterday I was blabbing the whole thing and everybody's like, don't blab the whole thing. So I'm trying to keep it cool.
Yeah, let's just say there's an interesting twist in this that sort of makes things come full circle, for lack of a better term, which you'll find out when you watch tonight. But along the lines of going up there, the driver that was on the field was in the middle of a psychotic state when she drove onto the field. What can you tell us about the person who was driving the car at this point?
Yeah, I mean, her name was Carol Sharrow, and she was a person, you know, who was well-known in the community. If you talk to her when she's fully medicated, she's as lucid, more lucid than you or I. But, you know, she had gotten, you know, she was vulnerable to these episodes and had been fighting them since she was 18 years old. By now she was 51. You know, she had a job. She was a cashier at the Lowe's. She took care of people in town. Everybody knew her. And then all of a sudden, she was the person driving around the diamond in a 2003 Honda Civic and wound up running over this, you know, 68-year-old Vietnam veteran who came down to help.
So, Tom, when you first went up to Maine and your wife tells you about this story and you go up there, what's the initial reaction from the people around there when you start asking questions about this?
Well, I got to tell you, you know, people in Maine are not known for being, you know, particularly like outgoing and like, come on in. And, you know, they definitely lived up to that rep. It was really, really hard in the beginning. I definitely had doors, I mean, literally slammed in my face. It was a painful episode that people didn't really want to talk about. But one by one, they began to trust me. And, you know, the story ends on both TV and in the print piece. It ends in this act of trust that, you know, unites these three families together. It was really, you know, one of the more remarkable experiences of my journalistic career.
Tom Juno with us, ESPN senior writer who did this television piece along with Martin Kotabashian, one of the great producers we have here at ESPN. Kmart is one of the absolute best. So, you know, stories like this, Tom, there's always a visual that draws you to the story. And obviously that visual would be someone having a psychotic episode, taking a car onto a baseball field where kids are playing. But normally a story like this that has twists and turns rests more importantly on the people that are involved. And that's sort of the center of this story specifically. What was the most surprising thing that you can share with us without giving it away that you learned about the people that were involved in this story?
Well, I mean, so the center of the story is a secret that is kept for 50 years. It's something like really, truly terrible that happened back in 1968, and that is horrifying, and that the people are all still living with. But it's the secret itself that is like the really bad thing. You know, it's the secret is what has destroyed lives, and everybody in the piece is sort of united by that. And, you know, and so the story becomes this kind of this journey to not expose the secret, but to reveal it as much for the people inside the story as for the people, you know, watching it or reading it as an audience.
I guess, Tom, just wrapping this up, everyone's going to watch it and draw their own conclusions. For you, having gone through all this, experienced it firsthand, what did you come away sort of learning from or about this entire episode?
Well, you know, so the big question, I mean, there's 200 people at this ball field when she goes on the field. She kills one guy. The big question is, why that guy? And, you know, I mean, people still, you know, everybody I talked to in this piece, you know, debated that question. And a lot of people in the story come to different conclusions. My conclusion is that he shouldn't have kept the secret. And once he did keep the secret, he should have apologized. I think that everything would have come out different if that didn't happen. If he had apologized to the people he wronged, I don't think he would have been on the field that day.
Yeah, it really is. You know, I've seen the trailer. I'm looking forward to the thing tonight. It really is a remarkable story about how things can change in an instant and how things are almost always connected. Again, it's The Hero of Goodall Park, E60 piece tonight, debuting at 7 o'clock Eastern. Again, you can also read the written piece by Tom on ESPN.com right now. Tom, we appreciate your time. Really looking forward to seeing this tonight. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks so much, guys.
Yeah, and again, Martin Kotobashian, I've had the pleasure of working with on several occasions, was the producer of this. One of the best we have at ESPN. He will do an amazing job, and I'm sure he did an amazing job with this.
Listen, he's going to struggle. Pat Mahomes did not play his rookie year at barely at all. There is no chance on God's green earth he comes in next year and lights it up. There's something amazing to me about the fact that you have a Chief team that can win now, that you're going to go now to a young quarterback. I'm a little surprised.
That aged well.
I love you, Dad.
We're thinking of you.
Going
catching some big bass out there.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Big time.
Big fishy boy out here right now. Golic and Wingo brought to you by DraftKings, America's top-rated daily fantasy app. Yeah, there are a few things. I always said on a good day, I think if my dad was honest, he probably loves wrestling just as much as he loves football, maybe even a little bit more. Bass fishing is not far behind.
Well, listen, he and Mark Zona had a haul yesterday, according to the pictures that we saw.
Yeah, no, I'd imagine there was some homemade jerky and some good times out fishing for Dad, enjoying a few days off. In the interim here, I'll be back at the end of the week, and he'll be back to the news that we all got to enjoy today. And you know what? Maybe it's fitting, Trey, that it was you and I doing the show today as Patrick Mahomes celebrates $500 million in newfound contract
love. It does make more sense because we were all in from his first ever start. We were all in 100%. So Golic and Wingo here with you, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests have joined us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. So Patrick Mahomes gets his deal. There's a couple of things you need to understand. First, Jeff Darlington summed this up perfectly. Again, this deal only costs them an extra $30,000 on the cap for the upcoming season, which means if they want to, it will not hinder them, according to Jeff Darlington, from going and getting the players they want to get.
Well, just from the conversations that I'm having, it's one of those deals where, yes, it's eye-popping. It catches your attention because of the magnitude. But there's not one person that I've talked to that said anything remotely like, man, that feels like a lot of money for Patrick Mahomes, right? This feels right. And the one thing that we need to understand about this deal is the way it's structured in terms of length actually allows the team to plan. They can make moves on the side. They can start to build their roster knowing exactly who and what Patrick Mahomes will cost them in terms of long-term planning. And I think that Brett Veach, the team's general manager, put it best. He said, we're going to continue to do everything we can to surround him with talent, and this deal provides us more flexibility to do that. I know you might not think that way when you see that monster number, but it truly does allow the Chiefs to continue to proceed with the potential dynasty on the horizon.
And that translates quickly into one thing. Number one, they can be comfortable with a $16 million cap hit for Chris Jones if they don't get a long-term deal signed with him. And you don't think that's going to happen because these two have been going at it for a while, and they really haven't moved either way.
I look at the situation and go, what else were they supposed to do?
Yeah.
Like, what else were they going to do? Like Lewis said, are you not going to sign Patrick Mahomes? This is the challenge to the front office from this point forward. And what did we say earlier? Let God send us all a challenge. I put it in the heaviest air quotes that I can that looks like Patrick Mahomes.
Correct.
Because if that's the challenge that you got to deal with, you're in pretty good shape in all this. They will figure it out. They will work with it. Again, having security at the most important position in North American sports with the best guy at that position, like unequivocally, undoubtedly. Because what are you going to do? Like, even in this situation, do you wait another year for him to potentially add another MVP or another Super Bowl to the case that now you've got to reckon with here? Like, he had already in 2 years accumulated more leverage than anyone would know what to do with, and you're really, as the Chiefs, going to bet against that guy now and say, hey, maybe he takes a step back this year and bet the pass line against your own interest? Not a chance.
Right. And so,
or the do not pass line.
Right. Here's the other thing that you need to understand. This is not a 12-year deal. This is not a 10-year deal. This is a deal that's going to be reworked in probably 5 years.
Yeah.
All right, that's the point. We had Bill Barnwell on with us. So when you see the eye-popping numbers, and again, some of those incentives right now, he's going to have to win multiple Super Bowls and multiple Super Bowl MVPs and multiple regular season MVPs to get to the $503 million. But what I'm here to tell you is he's going to surpass that $500 million easily without those incentives, because the way this deal is broken down, for the first 4 or 5 years of the deal, it's fine in terms of cap hit and all that kind of stuff. I think it's the 2027 year, which is guaranteed in what, either 2025 or 2026 yep. going forward, where there's a massive spike. So they're going to rework this deal again. And when they do it again, we're looking at a contract well north of $50 million a year for Hall of Famer Patrick Mahomes. So we can revel in the length of this deal and the money that it might accrue now. I'm telling you, in real dollars, we're going to be doing this again in a couple of years, and it's going to far surpass the $500 million.
Bill also broke down this number of quarterbacks who would be up around that time for new deals, and it's going to be, you know, the kind of reverse of the situation where we're talking about Patrick Mahomes being the rising tide that lifts all ships here. Again, when it comes to that 2025 range, he's going to be able to look around at these other quarterbacks that are coming up for paydays that get paid before he's scheduled to do anything and say, yeah, you guys still see at that point, we'd likely anticipate I'm outperforming all of those players right now. You'd like to be able to spread more of this money out. You'd like to be able to avoid the things that we know are never going to be a part of this. Like, we say this when guys sign 5 and 6 year deals.
Correct.
That they'll never see the end of this contract. And we really think there's a chance. Like, it's a great number. It's, you know what it is? It's a show. We're in this with Pat.
Yes.
This is how much we believe in you, that we're willing to stake the next 10 years on it. You and I both know, meaning the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, that we're never going to see that day, but at the very least, we're going to come out and show you we think the moon and back of you. Yep. We think the world and then some of Patrick Mahomes, and we're willing to tie ourselves, chain ourselves, and walk into any scenario with you as our partner.
Here's the best way to describe what an outlier Patrick Mahomes is in the way he's performed. And you mentioned it earlier. It was a tweet from Paul Hembekidis, who does a great job for us here at ESPN. The longest active streaks of a game played with a quarterback rating of 50 plus or more. And the QBR is basically 0 to 100. So a 50 QBR game is average. You're okay.
It's the perfect line as far as the way that we rate and grade quarterbacks between good and bad when it comes to that.
Longest active streaks, Deshaun Watson, 3 games. Russell Wilson, 3 games. Derek Carr, 4 games. Matthew Stafford, 9 games. Patrick Mahomes, 36 games. Now would be a good time to tell you his entire starting career, including postseason, is 36 games. He's never been average. He's been exceptionally above average in every single start he's ever made in the National Football League.
What the Chiefs have done is they have taken the ultimate boom quarterback and put him in an offense that's built to do so. The analytics darling that is never out of anything, and let it be no greater showing of that than the entire playoff run where they erase double-digit deficits like they were the Golden State Warriors because they are built to kill and they are built to do it at will. It's unbelievable to watch, and we get to do it for another decade.
It's so much fun. In fact, his average QBR is almost 79, first in the NFL. It's ridiculous. Coming up tomorrow, Marcus Spears, noted sports psychologist Bob Rotella. What's the lack of fans and the impact that has on athletes? Plus, either, neither, and both. Have a great day. Have a Mahomes day.